as Junior kindly said, I've got a long background in working with children with autism and adults with autism, but my work now as a barrister is focused on very much the same client group, but also a wider group of vulnerable people. I mainly represent claimants in applications for judicial review in the High Court, but I also do quite a lot of advisory work for charities, including the NAS and government bodies as well. So the point of this morning's session is to review some of the key recent developments in community care law, and I'm using that in the broadest sense, so effectively anything that isn't education, because I'm going to be covering education later on this morning. I'll jump up.
Steve, can I just mention they are on the tables?
That's great, thanks. So you have slides on tables in front of you if you want to follow. Okay, so this is the agenda for the morning. While you have your coffee and pastries, and you're all very brave for coming and hearing me talk about the law before 9 o'clock in the morning. I think that deserves a special medal. But if anyone has any questions at any point, please jump in. I think the point of this morning is that it should be interactive, and I'm here to try and answer anything you might want to ask me about the law in relation to children or adults with autism. So, try me out, see how we get on. Four topics I would like to talk about. Firstly, the Autism Act and the statutory guidance. Now, I know there was a seminar session about that yesterday. Did anyone go to that session? Very good. So you can tell me what happened there. But the point of this morning, I think, is to look at it from a lawyer's perspective and to try and tease out which bits of the guidance might be enforceable and how they might be enforced. Secondly, I thought we should talk about personalisation and what the law has to say about this rather controversial area of policy and practice. Thirdly, the new short breaks duty for disabled children, which includes, of course, all children with autism. And finally, and perhaps most importantly of all, in the current climate and given the title of this conference, some thoughts as to what the law has to say about challenging cuts to services, both to individual families, but also globally or collectively as well. Some very interesting recent developments. And it says followed by open discussions, but as I said before, I'm happy to take questions at any point. So, the Autism Act, it's a huge success for the autism community as a whole, and it is, as I'm sure you know, the first condition-specific piece of legislation in England. It's an enabling act in legal terms, so its function is to require the strategy to be produced and then guidance to be passed, and it is the guidance that is at the centre of the change that the Autism Act is supposed to create. It's Section 3 of the Act. And it says that section says that guidance is to be treated as a general guidance to the Secretary of State under Section 7 of the Local Authority Social Services Act. Section 7 guidance is well known now in social care circles, and the case there, Rickson, tells us that guidance that's passed under Section 7 of the 1970 Act has to be followed unless there is good reason not to do so. So this is where the legal force of the guidance comes. And here's a quote from what the judge said in the Rickson case. Parliament, in enacting Section 7, did not intend local authorities to whom ministerial guidance was given to be free, having considered it, to take it or leave it. Parliament, by Section 7, has required local authorities to follow the path charted by the Secretary of State's guidance, with liberty to deviate from it when the local authority judges on admissible grounds that there is good reason to do so, but without the freedom to take a substantially different course. So that is a very long-winded way of saying it must be followed, absent good reason not to do so. And importantly, and very innovatively, I was very surprised to see this, under Section 3, subsection 3 of the Act, NHS bodies are to be treated as if they are local authorities for the purposes of the Act. And that's how Parliament got round the problem of the tradition we have in this country of not binding the NHS, with guidance. So just specifically for the purposes of the Autism Act and the guidance, an NHS body is a local authority. And it works. It's a rather curious way of doing it, but it works. And it means that the guidance has the same force and the same capability, the same enforceability in relation to primary care trusts and strategic health authorities. One important gap is that an NHS Foundation Trust is not an NHS body for the purposes of this Act. So a lot of hospital